excellent namers. You know they have a whole staff of namers? They have like a room full of namers.
Where's Cheney? He's done with the namers, sir. So like that?
But a hard enabler.
Hard enabler?
Yeah.
A maker of pace.
Yes.
So where were we? Hearings.
Hearings. Yes. All right. So, focus, Dave.
So they asked a bunch of questions of Gonzalez, who did his very, very best not to answer any of them. But the fact is, he didn't have to answer any of them. Do you know why?
Why?
Do you know what they do to every witness who usually appears before a congressional committee?
What?
Do you know what the first thing they do to that witness is?
No.
They make them place his or her hand upon the holy book of their choice. Or maybe they might not have a choice.
I don't think it's the Bible. I think it's the King James, I think.
Yeah, and they
maybe
swear...
Maybe it's the Revised.
They swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help from God.
Yeah.
They didn't swear Alberto Gonzalez in.
Is that true?
Yeah, they didn't require him to take an oath.
So he didn't take an oath so he could lie.
Yeah, he could lie. See, this is the party of honesty and integrity in government.
Liars.
Right. Well, he didn't lie. He didn't violate any oath that he took because we told him he didn't have to take the oath.
And the Democrats didn't say, hey, get the Bible.
No, actually they did.
They did.
Yes. They other members of the committee, most notably Senator Leahy, he asked that Gonzalez be placed under oath, but a very quick party line vote of the committee determined he didn't have to be.
So why have the hearings? Why didn't the Democrats walk out?
That's a very good question. Had I been the Democrats,
what's
I would
the point?
Have walked out.
What's the point? We got a witness in here. We tell him we can lie. Why should we bother?
Yeah, and if we have Joe Blow from Podunk, Idaho in here, he's got to take an oath. Why not the Attorney General of the United States?
Wait a minute. You're lying. There's no Podunk, Idaho.
You're right. I am.
Okay. Watch that.
Okay.
But there is a liar as Attorney General.
Yeah, there is a liar.
Liar!
So one of the tropes that the administration has been throwing out since this this whole leak... no leaks. So many scandals, I get confused.
Yeah.
Since the spying business came to light,
right.
Is that they decided that they didn't need to go to Congress to have a new law passed, that they were acting within their authority, both the president's innate constitutional authority and authority he claims was given him.
Wait, hold it. There's a FISA law.
Right, the FISA law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
But it already exists.
Yeah, and it gives, in my mind, questionable latitude already to the feds if they want to monitor people.
Yeah, let's be clear about this. You have 72 hours of spying without even reporting to the special secret FISA judges.
Right, exactly.
And then you go to them, and they always agree.
Always.
Always. Like 17 like, cases they didn't.
And thousands and thousands they granted.
Yeah, so why did they go around this? They don't even obey that. What's the deal?
Well, I'll get to that in just a moment.
Oh, please.
All right. So that's the line that they've been tossing out. Well, we didn't need to go to Congress. But the fact is, they did go to Congress. They approached Congress as they were contemplating this plan. So, they met with some highly placed GOP members, I'm assuming. And they sent out some feelers, and the response was, no, you're not going to be able to get this legislation from Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So then, of course, they went on ahead and did with this program in secret.
Without the legislation.
Without the legislation.
Without the enabling legislation.
Without the enabling legislation. And now their line is, of course, that they've always had the power. The president's always had the power, not only under the Constitution, but under the resolution that gave him the authority to use force in Afghanistan and Iraq.
But more important, their line is, any questioning of this gives aid and comfort to Al-Qaeda.
Exactly. So if he's always had this power, then why did they approach Congress?
That's a silence, because I don't have an answer.
Yeah, I don't have an answer either. So Gonzalez went on and on again with this.
Not under oath. Lying.
Right. And I have to say that while there was some pressure applied by some of the Democratic senators,
oh man,
there wasn't enough of it. And the fact that Gonzalez wasn't under oath made it all kind of moot anyway.
Well, why didn't they, if I was a senator, I'd say, hey, Gonzalez. Alberto, isn't it?
Alberto. Yeah.
Alberto, why don't you just right now, there's a Bible right over there, why don't you just take an oath and answer these questions? Alberto, what are you afraid of? Is it that you know you're going to be lying?
Yeah, I mean, that would have been the responsible thing to do.
Or better yet, why is it you need to go around this law that absolutely takes care of this, that is already a dubious law? Because what? Because you're doing something other than what you claim? I mean, direct, confrontational stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Impolite questions.
Because you know what? The Congress of the United States, particularly the Senate of the United States, these august old...
White guys?
White guys and a few white ladies. They are absolutely chicken.
They are.
We can't say the other part of that phrase because it's the morning.
I know.
But they're chicken.
We could say it if our show is later on.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Actually.
So, a Republican senator, I'm not sure whom, he spoke after Senator Leahy, spent a great deal of his time complaining about the irresponsibility of the liberal media, particularly the New York Times.
Oh, it's the fault of the New York Times again.
Because they jeopardized national security, they informed the enemy, and they compromised the war on terror because they came forward with this story.
A year late.
After the Times sat on the story at the behest of the administration for a year. Now, this senator, whoever it is, and if somebody can call me up and tell me who it was, I'd appreciate it, has the gall to sit in his committee hearing and talk about how who's at fault here is really the New York Times and, by extension, the political opposition for bringing this to light. And now, he compared it directly to the Plame leak case, which he said seems like small potatoes next to the egregious wrong done by whoever decided to out this unconstitutional, illegal, and immoral domestic spying program.
Al-Qaeda is having an orgy of joy because of this. We are giving aid and comfort. We are because they, you know, they never thought, Al-Qaeda would never think that the U.S., legally or illegally, would be tapping their phones. Never would occur to them because they are ignorant.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, isn't that the assumption? No. I mean, isn't that the stupid assumption involved?
Yes. Oh, you could say whatever you like. No one's listening.
No one ever listens. Americans do not listen. Americans do not have an intelligence apparatus. We do not need to worry about that.
Yeah, this just pissed me off no end yesterday.
Okay, well, all right. But that's not the only thing troubling you, Bunky?
Yeah, well, the budget's bothering me too, but we can get to that later.
The budget's bothering you, and I suppose you're upset about those Danes.
Damn
Danes.
Yeah, but 231-8187 is the number to call. You can call in and comment on this and other things.
So much stuff. Oh, man, did you know that the tax situation has been changed to the extent that the richest 400 families only pay 17% of their income, not their worth, income in taxes, while the average of us pays 15%.
So the investor class that sits around the pool and waits for the dividend checks to roll in pay a smaller chunk of their income in taxes.
Well, they pay a 2% higher chunk of their income than the average of us, like you and me.
Right.
And this is supposedly a progressive tax system.
Well, it is. It's putting the squeeze on those people. I heard some of them had to sell the house in Paris.
That's not true.
Oh.
Nothing. It's no squeeze, nothing, because they have these tax lawyers, and then they don't pay even that. The thing is, the tax burden has shifted over the most recent years, including the Republicans and Democrats, both parties, from a system that taxed the rich pretty high to a system that essentially taxes the working people of America.
Yeah.
And that system, interestingly enough, does not raise enough revenue to carry the enormous budget that we are having.
No.
And did you know the new budget doesn't even include the wars in Afghanistan?
No, well, that's been going on for a few years now.
I mean, it's off budget.
Yeah.
Off budget.
Yeah, we're off budget. We've invaded and occupied two countries, but we're off not going to we're not going to put that on the balance sheet.
I'm sorry, it's off budget.
Yeah.
Oh, and then this.
How much does that cost? Well, I mean, we don't.
Oh, it's off budget.
Yeah.
It's off budget. Besides, it's a national state secret, you know, how much it really costs.
I'm going to put all my debt off budget.
Well, why can't we put our debt, yours and mine, let's have a be a country, we'll just put everything we have off budget.
So how much, Joe, how much you paid in a mortgage and health care every month?
I'm sorry, that's off budget.
Oh, okay.
How about the BLM freezing the OSU grant on the forestry grant for the logging down there in the biscuit?
Some more throttling of science?
Yeah, throttle science. Yeah. We don't like what you're saying.
Dude, empiricism is so 20th century.
Oh, really? Who cares about the facts? Let's go with our faith-basedness.
Yeah, this objective world is just too mean and nasty.
Oh, we got a lot of phone calls. 231-8187. Who do we got? Michelle? Michelle!
Good morning, Michelle. You've reached the winter of our discontent.
Michelle.
You guys are crazy.
No,
it's true.
We're
really
rational.
You're crazy.
We're
okay,
rational.
So I have this serious question that has been bothering me.
The answer is 17.
No. That's not the answer. Okay. So, the President of the United States, hold on, Willamette Waste Management has to go by. Okay. The President.
And you know, they used to be by rumor. Now, we know it's not true. Associated with the never mind.
Anyways. Okay. So, the President of the United States doesn't have to have a college degree in, like, political science or anything?
No. He doesn't even have to be a male anymore. He just has to be 36.
What?
And born in the United States.
Yep.
No. Yes. It doesn't make sense. Okay, so
well, that's what it is, you know.
The person who's running the country, right, the President of the United States, should, like, I don't know if it's theoretically should have to have a degree in some kind of A, law, B, science, C, something else. I don't know.
Why? Why? Seriously,
well,
why?
I don't understand. Well, so it's just confusing to me because
Michelle, with even with all of your confusion, let me assure you, I would prefer you to be president of the United States than the current holder of that office.
Well,
and I have no idea what degrees you have.
Well, I don't have any degree.
See?
So.
I'm going to trust you.
But the key word is yet.
Yet.
Yes.
I see, yet.
So when I get the government funding...
Oh, you'll never get that, Michelle. Sorry, we have to cut your budget.
Oh,
when you kick off your campaign, you can come on our show.
Oh, okay, that's good.
In fact, if you run for president, I guarantee you a spot on KBOO.
Oh, my gosh, okay.
Are you 36 yet?
No.
You can't run
yet. I have this theory that if Oprah Winfrey ran for president, I promise you, I would vote for her. Really, would you?
But she doesn't have a degree in law, and she doesn't have a degree in political science, and
all she is
this entertainer.
Yeah, but she does good with the power and the money that she has.
Well, that's true, but she hangs out with Dr. Feelgood.
Phil?
What is
yeah.
his name?
Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil, yeah.
Dr. Phil, yeah.
Oh.
You don't want to have anyone that hangs out with Dr. Phil be in any position of power, let me tell you.
Oh, gosh, you guys are funny. Okay.
That's true.
Well, hey, thank you, Michelle.
You're welcome.
Oprah's a heavy hitter, man. If she ran for president, if she said, I'm running for president, she would immediately be a contender and a force.
She would be a contender.
And how many people would vote for her? That's what I want to know. Like,
well,
I want to know
given the
numbers.
Given the choices that are in front of me right now, I'd vote for her.
Really?
Well, yeah. What's the choice? I mean, nobody.
Yeah.
So, you know, she wins.
Yeah, Oprah or a Democratic mollusk, and I'd vote for Oprah.
A Democratic mollusk?
Yeah, they have no backbones.
Oh, mollusks, yes.
What's a mollusk?
Like a snail.
Yeah, like snail or a clam.
Or a shell oil shell.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, gosh.
You know, one of those things you eat, what is it called, the mussels?
Right.
Okay,
right.
I got it.
Hey, well, thanks for the call, Michelle. Appreciate it.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
She has a point.
Yeah, she does. Well, the best president has
an
MBA.
She does have a point, actually. I have to say, I don't think a degree or degrees are a reasonable criterion. There are plenty of well-educated people who have no formal...
Cast your mind back, Joe.
I'm casting my mind
back. Cast it back to late 1999
and 2000. Oh, that's so far ago, dude. I was like three.
Do you remember the campaign that elected President Gore? Do you remember that campaign?
Gore?
Yep. You remember now President Bush... Yes, I just named two presidents, but run with me on this one.
Okay.
Remember he was talking about how he had an MBA?
Bush has an MBA.
He was going to be the first president to run the company or run the country like a company.
Ha.
And that he would be fiscally responsible.
Fiscally responsible. Ha.
So let's look at that for a moment. So the centerpiece of the president's economic policy has been to slash taxes to the effect that he has cut off his principal revenue stream from the people most able to provide it.
Yes.
So I ask you, what business manager slashes his largest revenue stream? And do you keep that manager in his job?
No. No business manager would do that.
No.
Not for long.
I'm beginning to think he wasn't entirely truthful.
I'm beginning to think his MBA. Where did he get his MBA? Harvard?
Harvard.
How did he earn an MBA from Harvard?
Well, you see, when you're born with a silver spoon in your nose,
yes,
doors open for you.
Did you say silver spoon in your nose?
I did.
I didn't want to go that unnoticed.
Okay, good.
Are you suggesting that the President of the United States may have been snorting cocaine in his youth?
No.
Okay.
I would never do that.
All right. Let's go to Jeff.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, you guys aren't crazy. You're great.
231-8187, though, is the number to call.
Hey, you know what?
What?
You have to be 35.
Did I say 35?
And born in the United States.
You said 36.
I said 36. Well, okay, so I was off by a year.
Now, of course,
accuracy is nothing.
The system says you need to be white and male, but that's the system. And now,
well,
the Constitution,
I think Hillary.
The Constitution just says 35 and born here.
I think Hillary has a shot.
Senator Cornyn. Is the senator you're thinking of?
I thought that might have been him. He sounded Texan.
He's particularly wicked because he played patty cake with the attorney general yesterday in a miserable example of this.
Yeah, it was awful.
Defend the president at any cost, and this whole what do they call it, the Unitarian Executive.
That's right. But isn't this the party of morality and ethics? Haven't these people campaigned?
Don't even get me started.
Haven't they campaigned on
those who would campaign on moral values?
Well, wait. Now remember, no stained dress. That's the important thing.
But haven't they espoused Madisonian principles for years and years about how government should be small and should stay out of people's lives? And
you know, I'm a Republican, and I'm appalled, and the only reason I'm still a Republican is because I feel I might have a little bit of power in the primary. I'm not a wealthy Republican at all. I'm a John McCain, Teddy Roosevelt Republican.
Ah.
And I am appalled. I think many Republicans who are even anywhere near the center, let alone left of center in their own politics, many of us are completely appalled and peeling away like onion skin off of this party.
So you're a traditional fiscal conservative, property rights, civil liberties Republican.
Absolutely. A part of conservative is conservationist. Easy.
Right.
Yeah, I've always thought that made sense.
I remember that. I remember when that was true. It's been a while, though.
To conserve is a good and a personal good. You remember Dick Cheney, he said, conservation is a personal virtue, but not a good national policy. I disagree completely because our national policies are founded on our own morality as a nation, as a society.
Dick Cheney replaced his heart with a pacemaker.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to send out a little electronic zap.
Oh, no, don't say that. That is actually a federal crime.
Let me ask you a question in two parts, if I may.
Sure.
First of all, Jeff, why don't you walk us through exactly how you, as a Republican, came to feel alienated by the cabal that's taken over your party? And secondly, what do you think explains the continued loyalty of so many of your fellow Republicans?
Well, first of all, I got an answer from a cat on the bus the other day. I was talking with this cat, and we were talking about why people do this and why people do that. And he came up with the end-all answer of all answers.
What was that?
And it is a two-word answer. Why do people do this? Dollar bills.
Oh.
And that just ended the conversation, you know what I'm saying? And that's what's utterly corrupted the Republican Party, because the party believes that people should keep their money, not give it over to lobbyists, then give it to politicians to run for office on a campaign finance system that is entirely based on what's in your pocket. It's sick. And it's not in keeping with all of those things that say conserve, you see.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the second part of the question was,
How do you explain the continued loyalty of your fellow Republicans?
Because I still believe in the principles that they espouse. Unfortunately, they're being espoused by corrupted mouths, and I'd love to see like Israel has done, where the Likud and the Labor have now attracted this new party. You know, I think there is some validity in the idea that Republicans peeling away from the Republican Party and Democrats who are disaffected and now independent can actually move towards some kind of middle party. I'd love to see that.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. You give me hope for the possibility of a two-party system.
Thanks, and keep listening.
Yeah. See, I think I want to reiterate something I've said a few times, but it's really important. If this program is worth anything, at all, it has to reach out to conservatives and to people, even people who actually, you know, 180 degrees disagree with us. We have to reach beyond that in Portland, enormous progressive consensus. I found out we have a large listenership, but we need more. We need more conservatives.
That's just part of what we need to do, though. Yeah, we also need to keep preaching to the choir, and we need to provide them with something beyond mere rhetoric.
To the choir!
Right, because you know, a lot of opinions are changed, you know, around the water cooler at work or on the bus or in any number of places. You know, and if you just go in there armed with empty rhetorical flourishes, you're not going to get any place.
You have a Dagwood Bumstead image of the world, don't you?
Perhaps I do. But, you know, all the other side offers is empty rhetoric and manipulation of symbols. So we've got to come back with something a little more solid.
Okay.
And that's part of our job, too.
Okay. So what do you think about the idea that the BLM is now censoring these upstarts at OSU, even though the upstarts were not the representatives of the forestry circus over there?
Well, it's part of their MO. They'll move to silence and discredit anybody who comes forward with anything to say against them. Like what happened to the National Academy of Sciences when the report that Bush himself commissioned came back and said, yes, global warming is very real and we need to do something about it now. And what did he say? Yes, I read the report that was put out by the bureaucracy. And dismissed
bureaucracy.
So, you know, even empirical science.
Did you,
is not good enough for these people.
Did you know that there was NASA was supposed to launch a satellite that would be in a right position to actually see and record global warming, and that program was canceled?
No, I didn't know
that. No, that's really true, actually. That happened. And also that NASA scientist talked about global warming, and they punished him, and then they had a long discussion about how they really were going to encourage openness.
Yeah, and any NASA publications that come out now have to include the word theory.
Theory.
If it's attached to the phrase global warming.
Well, you know.
Or whenever they use the phrase global
evolution warming. Evolution is just a theory.
Yeah, just a theory.
Just a theory. Yeah,
but in science, that means
death
it's
by
just
cyanide,
good as gold.
Just a theory. You know, bullet wound through brain kills, just a theory.
Yeah, also, this just in, all Newton's work are just theory, so go walk off the Hawthorne Bridge and see how well that theory works.
That's just a theory.
Yeah.
Apple on head theory. 231-8187. Sean,
good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Yeah, good morning. What I was mainly talking about, calling to talk about, was the budget, which I'm appalled at, too.
Yeah.
And especially 7% increase in military spending.
Yes.
I've been reading an interesting book called The New American Militarism.
Uh-huh.
And I forget the author's name, but
that's okay.
But anyway, basically, you know, if you look back at it, 9/11 was terrible what happened, but we are in a much safer, you know, before 9/11, in the midst of the Cold War, we were facing, you know, possible nuclear annihilation overnight, you know, in a press of a button. That pretty much has diminished. Just the fact that nothing happened then, people tend to think we were very safe back then. Or people, you know, Bush saying that, oh, you know, before 9/11, we can no longer depend on the width of the ocean to protect us. There were 20,000 ICBMs pointed at us.
Yeah, that's
true. But anyway, what I'm trying to say is, why can't the Democrats, nobody is prepared to stand up and say we're spending way too much in the military. And they should say, okay, we agree we need to fight the war on terrorism, but to fight the war on terrorism, Do we need 20 attack submarines? Do we need all these fancy high, you know, big aircraft carriers? Do we need all these massive spending on real high tech stuff like that? When our troops who are actually fighting, I'm completely against the war, don't get me wrong, but the guys who are actually fighting on the ground need personal armor, and they need the more basic type of equipment. You know, why can't the Democrats stand up and say we can slash the military spending by 50% and direct, and in doing so get rid of all this high tech, high fancy aircraft and all that, and at the same time we can direct more money towards the guys on the ground who are actually fighting the war on terrorism. But don't get me wrong, I'm not a proponent of that. I'm a proponent of cutting down the military, cutting it way down, and we need to, anyway, it's just a thought. There's no Democrats out there who's prepared to say that we're spending too much. And but they could justify it, because most of the American people, they could justify it by saying we don't need this real high tech weaponry. What good does it do? Well, so anyway, I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks a lot for
the call, Sean.
Hey, you know, I think it's important to understand that we are this is a little analysis here. We are, and I've said this before, the first democratic republic, that's little d, little r, mm-hmm. in history, in the Western world, in modern times, that's survived. Okay, which means that our system of government was developed as an elitist system for white property-owning males,
right.
And it evolved into a system that's a little more open, quite a bit more open, in fact. But it's basically a system that was designed not to have political parties, and a system that was very early on. Now, since that time, there's been a lot of chaos and change in Europe and elsewhere, and Western democracies have evolved new kinds of systems of democracy, including parliamentary systems. In Great Britain, for example, when the government guy gets up, he has to regularly answer questions and comments from members of parliament, which frequently are witty and, more important, hostile and confrontive.
And it's understood.
Yeah, it's part of the game.
To be hostile,
it's part of the game, and intelligence is part of the game. Well, we don't have anything like that. Moreover, we don't have any system where if you achieve some kind of threshold, like 5% of the vote, then, say, the Green Party immediately gets at least one vote in Congress. We have nothing like that. And consequently, our system, which was the most virtuous of those sort a long time ago, is now an anachronism that cannot represent the people adequately. So structurally, apart from the issues of rich and poor, apart from the issues of the dominance of money, apart from all of that, just structurally in terms of a form of government, our system no longer is functional for democracy.
No, it isn't.
And that's a real, I don't know how you, I mean, you have to have a major constitutional change, which ain't going to happen.
And it's also conditioned us to believe that there's only two answers to any possible problem.
I mean, like
one or two choices.
Democrats, Republicans and Republicrats?
Right.
Yeah.
And even, you're right, of late that's become a nominal choice.
Oh, the cowards in the Democratic Party.
That's the easy answer to Sean's. The easy answer to Sean's question is why can't the Democrats stand up is because, as I mentioned before, they don't have backbones. And an erect posture requires a backbone, according to science.
And then what's the leading Democratic candidate?
Hillary. All right. And the longer answer to Sean's question, why can't we get rid of these high-tech weapon programs, is because these weapon programs are a boondoggle to their manufacturers, who are themselves large contributors to Republican political campaigns.
And the workers in each of those plants, and the plants are always geographically distributed, depend on those jobs, and they would turn on their congressman if they didn't produce those jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's all locked up. Let's go out to Reggae Bob, 231-8187. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, fellas. How you doing there?
All right.
Hey, appreciate your show. I like your rapid fire. Let it be known. Get it out there. And I learn a little bit more every time I listen to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
A bit more. Also, I want a quick announcement, if I could. This morning at 8:30, downtown Portland City Hall, there's going to be a Coretta Scott King remembrance on the steps of City Hall, partially put together by one of the KBOO family, Bruce Broussard, and others.
Oh, I know Bruce. Yeah, that's great.
Oh, yeah, 8:30 City Hall. Come on down. It's just a little half hour, 25 minutes before you go to work type of remembrance this morning.
All right.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, thanks, fellas.
Hey, thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay. All right, that's coming up very soon, about a half hour.
You know, there's an excellent book, the last of the three-part series by Taylor Branch on the Civil Rights Movement. Really a great series, At Canaan's Edge, which analyzes the late years, the last years of Martin Luther King, and the civil rights struggle from the perspective of both King and President Johnson. It talks about the peculiar behavior of beyond peculiar, weird, ugly, vicious, repressive, fascist behavior of the dress-wearing head of the FBI.
Hoover.
And it, you know, and I think that people should read, should really read those three books. Taylor Branch.
That last part of Dr. King's life is fascinating. It's then that he made that profound change in his thinking and came to understand that the struggle for civil rights in the United States and the struggle to end the war in Vietnam were really part of the same struggle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's really... He even said in a meeting in 66, "I'm sick and tired of violence. I'm tired of the war in Vietnam. I'm tired of war and conflict in the world. I'm tired of shooting. I'm tired of hatred, and I'm tired of selfishness. I'm tired of evil. I'm not going to use violence, no matter who says it," and this is a response to some black nationalists. And he also talked about, you know, the notion of... And he really went through agony to do this. The notion of the evilness of the war in Vietnam. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, but I don't think we have the great souls that we need for this time of crisis in leadership of any sort.
I tend to agree with you.
This makes me.
The reason
sad.
That Dr. King and his movement were able to accomplish what they did is because they did so nonviolently, and the very deep and profound power of that was made evident to everybody. Like, when we have protests here, there's always this gang of black-clad youngsters.
Oh, don't attack
and
them.
They start,
don't attack the black bloc. Come on.
You know, well, as soon as windows start being broken, it de-emphasizes everything that's trying to be accomplished.
Yeah, but they don't actually break windows. What they do is they run around and try to break cops, and the cops always break them.
Yeah, well, it accomplishes the same purpose, which is to invalidate whatever's going on. It's as soon as somebody gets violent in a demonstration, all the other side will talk about is the violence.
Well,
the message is lost.
That's true. That's true.
The power and unity of a peaceful demonstration is lost.
Well, the whole question of discipline, you know, the whole question of organized work and is very important. And you know, I noticed that when Stu Albert died, His last interview in Willamette Week, I think this last week, as it happens, he talked about something that maybe distresses a lot of people. He said that these demonstrations are always so boring now.
Yeah, no
well,
good speakers,
it's a structural problem because you have too many speakers because each organization, in order to draw its membership, has to, kind of like defense budget, has to be represented. And all of those speakers say the same thing essentially, and it's extremely boring, and there is no charismatic figures.
Yeah.
I'm a charismatic speaker, but, you know, I don't represent anybody. So I would never get invited, I don't think.
Yeah, but the Urus Block would get their time.
The Urus Block?
Yeah.
They people in vaguely gray outfits?
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, no, but it's interesting. There are, forget my ego trip, but there really are, seriously, no charismatic speakers these days. And that's, you have to have charisma. You have to have that enormous force, moral, political, social.
Fire in the belly.
Fire in the belly. Fire in the John. Isn't that men? Fire in the John? I can't. All right. 2318187.
Annie is on the phone. Good morning.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine, but I'm thinking, hey, we don't need no stinking charismatic leaders. We don't need no stinking education for no president because he can just make the laws up as he goes along.
Isn't that so?
It's so much easier
what?
That way.
And as far as this MBA, you know, what I've seen about MBAs is they all they need to know is how to rip off the public, how to steal from their employees and take the money and run. And we have all those fine celebrities to lead us now, you know, because they're just all fine folk and they're just full of substance.
So the president got a fine education, that's what you're saying. Because he's doing exactly what he learned to do.
Exactly, except that, you know what, he still couldn't make it work for him because he drove every one of his businesses into the ground.
Well, he's keeping up with that trend, too.
He is. I don't know, going into the Middle East, he had two major priorities. Going into the Middle East, stealing from those folks, and then bankrupting our treasury. And you know what? It has worked.
He's on a roll.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, you got to give him credit.
Yep, slime ball that he is, you know. We have to give him credit for doing what he does best. So, I'm so, thank you, guys. You know, everyone else tells me I'm negative, but you know what? I don't think so.
Hey, keep up with the negativity. Just remember, everything you think that's going wrong is only more than you realize.
I know that, darling. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Annie. It's not as bad as you think. It's much, much worse.
All right. 231-8187.
The budget.
Oh, budget. The budget. Oh, look at the budget. The budget. Well, the wars are off the budget.
Right.
Don't pay any attention to the man in the booth.
Yeah, the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, the man behind the curtain.
Oz, never the mind. Great and powerful.
We're going to 141 programs, like, you know, educational programs. This education president. Educational programs.
Medicare, health
programs.
Yeah. Social Security.
He said, "Well, we're not going to lower the Medicare or Medicaid budget. No, no. What we're going to do is reduce it." But the people that are on it, it'll be okay. As if, like, you know, the baby boomers aren't coming up there and going to need health care. It's insane! The madmen are in charge. Liars and thieves.
Yeah. His proposals have more, actually, not proposals now, his laws have more than doubled our long-term entitlements, Medicare and Social Security.
Yeah, to enrich, one might add, the drug companies and such, and not to particularly give good health care to anyone. Did you know that I love victimizing old people. That's so cool. Older people are absolutely befuddled, bemused, and
bewildered,
and losing their medicines by this incredibly stupid, which the Democrats ended up supporting, drug plan.
Yes, they did.
Ah!
Actually, this is the drug plan that passed the House by one vote. You remember this?
One vote.
This is where they kept the vote open late into the wee hours.
Oh, yeah, and they violated the rules and made people come in.
Where Tom DeLay first bribed a congressman on the floor of the House and then threatened that same congressman on the floor of the House.
Well, who was that?
I can't remember the guy's name. First, he offered him a bribe in terms of campaign funds, then said, if you cross me on this, my machine will withdraw its support and there's no way that you'll ever be reelected.
I like that. Yeah. That's good. That's good. The hammer.
Yeah, the hammer.
The hammer.
So maybe we're being a little hard on the Democrats on this one. They almost to a member turned out against this bill.
Well, that's true. That's true. And the budget deficit is only, after all, $354 billion.
That's all.
But it's going to grow.
Not counting the war.
The wars don't count. The wars don't count. And if we have another war against Syria or perhaps Iran, it won't count either.
That amazes me. But it's politically brilliant. So you don't put the price of the war in the budget, see? Then you go to Congress later and say, well, the troops need the money. The troops need the money. And you can count on the fact that none of the Democrats will say, but Mr. President, $9 billion went missing in Iraq.
Well, no. That didn't go missing. It went into the pockets of, you know.
All right. Sorry. I interrupted you and you looked all mad that I did.
Oh, no.
So go ahead.
Oh, no, no. I was just thinking about how, you know, how essentially the reasons why this can happen are, for example, 30% of the American people believe that the whole universe is 10,000 years old,
mm-hmm.
and that Satan is alive, and no, more than 30% actually believe Satan's alive and makes things happen on Earth. I mean, literally, you know, this guy's walking around with a forked tail and stuff. Anyway, so they got that going on. So there's this whole other population that just are operating in nya-nya land, mm-hmm. all right? And they're real. I mean, I was talking to a woman yesterday. She believes this stuff. You know, they're real. It doesn't matter what fact. I said, well, what do you listen to? And she listens to talk radio, mm-hmm. i.e., you know, Rush Limbaugh and
Hannity and O'Reilly.
And all those idiots. And, you know, successful idiots.
Lars Larson.
Junkies and such. Yeah. Anyway, so they, you know, listening to all those guys. And then, Lars is not a junkie, let's be clear. And then, Lars, if you're listening, I know you're not a junkie. Okay. Then, that's one part of the 30% there. And then there's this... kind of entertained to death the rest of the population. You know, less than half of the eligible voters vote.
Right.
Yeah. So you got all these other people, they're stoned out of their minds on TV, alcohol, you know, whatever, and they don't know what's going on.
Well, that sounds good to me. God, the president is just as dumb as I am. I feel pretty good about that.
You know, and it's really bad. It's like a car being driven by a 3-year-old who's in the back seat. You know what I mean? Oh, Daddy, I want to stop now. You know, no. I want to go over there.
At least the airbag won't deploy.
No airbags in this car, dude.
Herb, you're up next. Good morning.
231-8187. Hi,
hello,
Herb.
Herb.
So, anyway, this you're in passing, there are some of you were talking about the it looks like a one-party system, and that occurred to me, like, about 40 years ago or
so. Oh, you caught on that early, huh?
That, you know, and I haven't seen a political science 101 textbook for years. But back then, I mean, it was all through it would be this, you know, the two-party system, and so forth.
Yeah.
And it struck me that it was like one big party pretending to be two parties, even more so back in them days.
Well, I think, yeah, I agree with you, but I think what it is it's two access routes to power, which are rivals in that struggle for power.
Yeah, but
and
I mean,
within each of those, there are little semi-parties struggling amongst that party.
But it really, what it resembles is one party with two wings.
Oh, I agree.
Like,
yeah. We agree.
And because they, you know, the way they stroke each other's backs, you know, and they have all these various ripoffs.
That's not the back they're stroking. Dude.
And then the, you know, like paying for the conventions out of the taxpayers' money and stuff like that. You know?
Oh, yeah. No, it's pretty outrageous. You know, one of the ironies is, speaking of this sort of thing, Portland has developed a system, Eric Sten and others, where the voters will pay for the elections of candidates, and it's a good idea. I want to be clear on this. I think publicly supported elections removed from the big money boys is a good idea. But the public is so outraged with politicians, so cynical with regard to the politicians, that they're being persuaded that they shouldn't support that, even though it's fundamentally a good idea, because they don't want... Essentially, they don't want to have any money go to the politicians. But the problem is, going back to my car image, the fact is that the car is going down the highway at a gazillion miles an hour, and it is being driven by 3-year-olds. And if you don't have a more responsible set of elected officials, that car is going to crash.
Did you vote for Sam Adams?
Did I vote for Sam Adams? Let's see, what was the choice? Sam Adams versus...
Anybody.
Anybody. I can't remember, actually.
But, I mean, there you go. I mean, talking about incompetence.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Sam is no worse than most of them, I think.
Now, that's true.
Now, here's what I think. The guy that I'd like to have a conversation with is... who was the other guy for running for mayor? What is his name?
Francisconi.
Francisconi and his cronies set up this deal with Kohler on the Hill to build the flying bus, you know, the tram, which they said would only cost originally was $10 million, then it was 15, then it was 30, then it's 45, then it's 55, and, you know, and rising, and they won't stop it. They cannot stop it. They're eventually going to build this thing because it's the cornerstone of their fantasy for this new town down there.
Yep.
I mean, that's a, I don't even. Don't
well, I mean, so why should we trust people like that? These are the same people who are bringing you the taxpayer campaigns.
Well,
I mean, why
yeah,
should we
I
trust
see your
people
I
like
see
that?
Your problem, and that was just what I was saying. Yeah. But I think until you have a system, which, for example, limits campaigning to, say, 30 days. Can't do this on our Constitution, of course. 30 days only or 60 days only. And until you limit the amount of money that people can contribute and corporations and whatever, and until you have a system which essentially makes it possible for ordinary folks to run in the primaries and in the campaigns,
well,
you're not going to have
a
chance.
Well, there's a lot of good ideas out there.
You're not going to have a chance.
I mean, like this proportional voting or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's... And KBOO had a lengthy show on it one time that I listened to, and I would vote for that, or I that seems like a good idea to me.
Well, my position, I don't know what Abe's is. In lieu of any of those excellent ideas, I still think publicly financed elections is a good idea.
Yeah, but one of your earlier callers was talking about, he mentioned Israel or whatever, and but see, one of the standard things, I forget all the rundown of it, but is that in a parliamentary type system where you have a strong prime minister,
mm-hmm.
That tends to develop parties. Whereas, as you mentioned, the U.S. system tends to like operate without any real party.
Of course, to be fair, when Labor moved to the center as New Labor, and this current cluck got in, handsome and clever that he is, essentially the British government joined with Bush in doing the most destructive and stupid set of wars ever.
But I mean, within British politics, their parties tend to be better defined and more competitive than American parties are.
That's true.
Point.
Yeah, your point is good. My point was that Labor is no longer Labor. So.
Well, yeah, but I mean, so that's whatever buys votes this year. Or whatever. but I mean, they still, you know, there's more party definition under a parliamentary system. And it might be if there were... this proportional voting or so forth. Okay.
Thanks a lot for that. All right, 2318187. What were we going
to
say about
I think the answer to Herb's question about publicly financed campaigns is it creates a system where politicians are fundamentally more accountable to the electorate than they are under a privately financed system. So the answer is, you know, if you don't like Sam Adams and Sam exists in the framework of publicly financed campaigns, then you elect somebody else next time. And that's how he's held accountable. He doesn't get to keep his job.
I want to keep this show focused on the issues.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is the budget, the BLM freezing the OSU grant because they had an article in Science by some scientists who were not part of the main study group. It might be pointed out who are criticizing the stupid cutting of the biscuit fire logging, and then we didn't talk about this book James Risser's State of War. We haven't talked about... one of the cool things that Risser tells about is how Bush, young Bush, George, hung up on his dad.
Really?
Yeah, he actually... This is the funniest thing. He actually hung up on his dad. His dad, this is so funny. I'm going to read you a quote. This explosive little book, A State of War, by James Risser, opens with a scene that is once amazing and yet not surprising. President Bush, the current Bush, angrily hanging up on the phone on his father... who was disturbed that his son was allowing Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and a cadre of neoconservative ideologues to exert broad influence over foreign policy. This is, you know, this is real, man. Dad, go to hell. Little boy. I'm going to hold my breath. I'm going to scream and yell. I'm going to have a temper tantrum. Daddy's wrong. Hang up.
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought the first Bush would be more intelligent, better...
Of a paragon of wisdom in comparison.
Ah! All right. 2318187.
A devotee of the old ways of doing things.
Louis!
Yo!
Hi, you're on the air, man.
How are you? So good to talk to you guys. You're doing important work there, and I want to say hi to my sweetie who's driving to work. But
hey, sweetie!
Issues you just brought up.
What?
What's that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just want to talk about the issues you brought up, the budget thing, the state of war situation. I have not been able to get a straight answer from anybody about... Are we legally...
Wait, let me get this straight. You're calling us for a straight answer?
Well, you know, you guys are doing straight or anybody's coming out of Washington, D.C.
That's
true. I imagine you're probably speaking, you know, Chinese, Arabic, Hebrew all the same time and make more sense than those guys. But they keep talking about, we've got, you know, war this, war that. Didn't he declare the war over? I mean, did we ever have a declared war? And if we don't, doesn't that mean everything he's doing is illegal and he should be arrested?
Well, that's been a long-running conversation in the United States. The last time we declared war was December 8th of 1941. And we've
don't we have a law about that that says
we
that
do.
The president gets these powers only when we have declared war?
Congress shall declare war. It's in the Constitution. We haven't declared war since the Second World War. This has been an expansion of executive power that this gang is only trying to encourage these days. Now,
I think I know why they're doing it.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. But let's hear your
really simple. The remember the caller who came out a little bit earlier said your MBA, his job seems to be to come in, figure out what the company has, sell off the assets, raid the pension fund, and then fly with as much as he can in his pockets. That, I think, is the current function of our government. Every industry I know of, I don't know of an industry, not one, not even aerospace. You know, Toshiba just bought Westinghouse's nuclear power plant business, for goodness sakes. So they're basically standing here while the country's being parted out. Jobs.
Yeah.
Infrastructure, you name it. And the bad thing is the guy we're all blaming, W, he's not responsible. This guy's Pinocchio. He's no different than Ronnie Reagan was, a front man for whatever they're doing behind our back.
A hood ornament.
Yeah, his job is to take the heat when it all goes bad. When it all goes bad, it's going bad, somebody's head's going to roll, and it'll probably end up being his. And just like in the bad old days, whenever we would overthrow the bad king and get a nicer king, overthrow the nicer king and get a democracy, that's the way they operate. They set up somebody to be the fall guy, whilst their own operations, these enormous corporations who tell them what to put in the budget, tell them what to take out of the budget, say, excuse me, Where's that money coming from for your OSU study? Well, that's coming from the government. Well, where'd that come from? Well, we don't think we want to have anything to do with that. So basically what we've got right now is a situation where our government no longer exists. We've had at least two elections that have been fixed, and its primary purpose seems to be selling off the parts of our government to for-profit operations, the whole purpose of which, pick everyone's pocket. I don't know how they can call themselves capitalists. They're ruining the capital infrastructure of the company and the country itself. So my question is, since our political system is broken, since we can't make all this operate anymore, how do we as Americans make the change? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, that's easy.
Well, that was easy. Go ahead, Joe.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that part of the reason this is Louis's comments are right on the money. And I'm not going to try to explain why right away that this is happening. I'm going to explain how. Part of the reason is that we exist now in a more or less permanent state of war that's being fought largely out of sight at unforeseen expense. And
since 1940.
Well, yeah, since 1940, yes.
Yeah.
But those more or less, I mean, there were covert conflicts going on all over the place. But, you know, more or less that was people knew what was going on and where and ostensibly why. But this war is a whole lot different. It's not being fought against another nation state. It's being fought against apparently an ideology of some kind rather than a tactic, which I think is what terrorism actually is. It's a tactic, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is going to go
it's
on.
A tactic that's used primarily by people who don't have a nation state from which to launch a war and who primarily are disenfranchised and at least perceive themselves as that.
Right, and who essentially are fighting in the only way that they are able.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to justify acts of terrorism here.
No.
But terrorist acts generally are enacted by groups who cannot mount a conventional military campaign.
Well, in fact, as far as that goes, the Boston Tea Party, while not particularly violent, was a terrorist act. The establishment of the State of Israel involved terrorism on the part of Zionist patriots. You know, this is not new to history at all.
Yeah. You know. So we've got this state of war that's going to exist for an indeterminate period of time, an indeterminate cost, and will be waged largely in secret. And under the cover of this, under this fog of war, if you will, the president has concentrated on expanding his executive powers, many of which, as we've talked about earlier, are done under the auspices of his role as commander-in-chief. We're at war. I had to do this, so I did it. And what's more, I'd do it again. And frankly, anybody who calls me on it is giving aid and comfort to the enemy and is potentially committing treason and isn't a real American. So shut the hell up and let me do what I'm doing, which is presiding over the dismantling of the nation state and the reapportionment of political and economic power to transnational corporations and their executive ruling class.
You know, and this is a lot of enabling by law. I wanted to mention this. The War Powers Act essentially removed the responsibility for limiting the ability of the president to declare war in the form that it's supposed to be in the Constitution. Essentially, now they can have basically a resolution of Congress. And it's on the basis, on that thin basis, that Bush is waging the quote-unquote war on terror. And really, after 9/11, the country went nuts. People got crazy. They suddenly realized that we were not invulnerable. The administration immediately leapt to the opportunity to do their war, which they'd been planning before that in Iraq.
Yep.
All this stuff went down. The Democrats did not play any kind of thoughtful role because they were afraid of being called, well, I don't know why they did it, but maybe they were afraid of being called too thoughtful or cowardly. Or,
oh, it rhymes with wussy, but they're afraid of being
called.
Oh,
well, you just yeah. Being a
and
sexist
they,
now.
They ran scared from the very, very beginning.
It is certainly the case that is so. But the guy has asked a really interesting question. He says, Louis, he says, well, you know, what do we do about this? Well, I think what we do is we have to allow the objective situation to manifest itself. I hate to sound like that, but I don't know how else to put it. You know, things will demonstrate for themselves, these things. One of the big dangers when things get worse is that we move even more into a fascist realm. So one of the things we have to do is constantly be presenting viable, realistic, democratic, small d, alternatives, which means running candidates, which means having discussions, which means even leafleting, riding on the sidewalk, demonstrating, talking it up at the water cooler, as you like to say. That's the Dagwood Bumstead approach.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do all of that, and we have to make sure that that goes on constantly. Yeah. And meanwhile, there are great forces at work. Eventually, the environmental degradation is going to lead to such obvious global warming that this whole thing will collapse probably anyway.
Yeah.
But I do believe that there is both existential virtue and potential for real change in continuing to struggle at home and through media and so on. Rational voices can be heard, and they just have to keep going and doing what they do. And it's really important to discuss how best to do it, which is why, for example, the question that was raised by Stu Albert, when do you get some charismatic leadership in the movement, is an interesting one. It's not necessarily the answer by any means for demonstrations, but it's important. The question of the role of the Black Bloc, which you hate, apparently, is an important...
No, I sympathize with the Black Bloc.
But it's an interesting question.
But their tactics ruin things for everybody else.
Yeah, and I think they should have their demos separate from everybody else. I think that would be the fair solution, and they can go running around and fighting the cops, since that's what they like to do. I always think fighting the police is sort of manifestly stupid. They got better weaponry, and they got the law on their side, and besides which, that's not the issue, usually, most times.
And what we need as well is for every Democrat in Congress to have their own personal long, dark night of the soul and come out on the other side and say, my political future be damned.
So you want them all to drop acid or something?
I don't care what they do. Self-flagellation, drugs, religion, I don't care. I don't care. As long as in the morning they look in the mirror and say, I really don't care if I'm reelected as a result of the vote I'm going to cast today or the speech I'm going to make today. I'm going to do it because everything that we hold dear, and indeed the whole legacy of reason that began with the Enlightenment, is at stake here. And if it means that I'm not reelected next time, so be it.
I think you're right. I mean, I do think that the Democrats, until they were willing to just speak truth to power, are nothing. They really are nothing. I like the Quakers on this issue. I mean, the Quakers and the pacifists, the War Resisters League and so on, all use that phrase, speak truth to power.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King, in other words, used that expression. But, of course, it depends on the ability to get the word out.
And it depends on tactics.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, there's a bunch of corollary questions that go along with this massive assumption of executive power that's been carried out by the president. Why, you might ask, would the president appropriate powers to himself, like the unwarranted spying on American citizens,
mm-hmm.
if possibly a Democratic president might wield those same powers one day. The answer is, these guys don't ever intend for there to be a Democratic president ever again.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point that people may not, I think our audience understands that, but a larger number of people maybe don't, which is these are not your usual Republicans understanding the web of flux, you know, the changing of the guard in the centrist, right-wing centrist government of the Democrats and Republicans. I think their intention is much more fascist. I think they intend to hold power by any means necessary, whether it's, you know, we've seen already in two national elections. Mm-hmm. That they have been willing to cheat and to hold that power. And in fact, the voting machines, all of the devices are in place for them to continue to hold power. Yep. And the wimping out of John Kerry, the failure of Gore, you know, at the ends of the 2000 and 2004 elections are indicative of the fact that the Democrats would rather two things. They'd rather have their machine intact, their party apparatus. Right. And they would rather have the myth that the system is real than to challenge the realities of what's happening.
Yep.
And to me, that's very disturbing.
It's a fundamental cowardice.
I think so.
And it's not going to help carry us through.
I think so. But then the question that Louis raises, well, what do you do? Well, you speak truth to power.
Mm-hmm.
You do what is necessary in your life. I have said often, probably ad nauseum, one day a week, of the 8 to 10,000 people listening to us, one day a week could make an incredible difference.
Yep.
And you know, you whatever it is you do, there's got to be many kinds of struggle. Again, writing on the sidewalk, designing posters, spray painting, walking the picket line, doing the demonstrations, writing letters to the editor, speaking out in public and private life. You know, when you go to church, hey, interrupt the sermon. What the hell? What are you going to get thrown out of the congregation? Oh, my goodness.
And if you do get thrown out, maybe that's not a congregation you want to be in.
Well, really? All right. 231-8187. Steve, you're on the air.
Good morning. Welcome to Sunshine Radio.
Hi, Steve.
Steve.
No, Steve.
Maybe we just drove.
It's the magic of it's the magic of the KBOO system there. Paul.
Oh, good morning, Paul.
Well, I think we have a glitch.
Dropping like flies.
I think we have no.
Yeah, you got them dropping like flies.
Hey, hi.
Is this Steve or Paul?
So, Joe, I thank you for punctuating my remarks ahead of me getting on the air.
Anytime.
Well.
Wait a minute, you going to repeat me?
No, I'm not going to repeat you.
Okay.
But I still want to thank you for punctuating my remarks. You know, there's a saying, all it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing.
Yes.
Par exemple, one of the unions that I belonged to was the IWA. And
IWA stands for what? Now, our audience doesn't know. So.
Oh, they don't?
No.
Hey, the cable audience should know that IWA was International Woodworkers of America.
Yay!
One of the strongest unions in Oregon, Washington, you know, in British Columbia, and, you know, people working in the woods and in the sawmills.
Right.
People used to complain, I don't know what happened with IWA. It used to be one of the best unions around. So my friend asked him, well, do you go to meetings? No. Well, duh.
Right. It used to be one of the most democratic unions, too. Democrat,
yes.
Small d.
Right. And so, you know, there are things that can be done, and I'm glad you brought up voter-owned elections. Only problem is I can't find a phone number for them, but that was a good idea of Eric Stentz. And if people want to support voter-owned elections, Lucinda Tate, who's, people don't realize this, but she does have a good public administration background, and you can go to vote, numeral 4, Lucinda, on the web, and go to vote for Lucinda and look her up.
Mm-hmm.
And
who else is running in that race?
Who else is running in that race? Dan Saltzman is running in that race.
Yeah, but isn't there another independent candidate who's
Yeah, there's another one. Amanda Fritz is running in that race. And there's a KBOO person that belongs in the R, that is in the R column, is running in that race. But we can't mention them, I guess.
Well, we can.
No. Well, I'm not going to.
Oh, all right.
I am a bit partisan. I
guess so.
I can't.
We are not allowed to advocate candidates.
Yeah, I understand that. You know, and I know how to play the game too.
Okay. Well.
But there is, you know, there are alternatives. I like the guy that was back there a little while back, the about quarter to or 10 to 8, to call in, the conservative guy. And there are, you know, there are Democrats that are out there that are saying things and are speaking truth to power, but they're not getting a lot of traction in the press. And I went and heard this guy, Pete Sorensen, www.PETESOREN.com, PeteSorensen.com. I went and heard him speak at over there at the Environmental Middle School just last night.
What's he running for?
He's running for governor.
Ah.
He's in the Democratic primary. And you know what? Like I said, he's not getting any traction in the press, but, you know, when they run polling and run him against Mannix, he wins. They run polling, they run him against Ron Saxton, he wins. And I don't know that Ted will, but...
I don't know. But I noticed that Saxton looked a little chubs on TV last night.
Well, yeah.
I like to judge my candidates by their appearance.
Well, he always has. I mean, he's got the same look he always has, but he's got some bad baggage. But what Pete has is Pete has some positive programs, and he knows how to. He actually doesn't just talk about getting, you know, funding more money for community colleges, but if you ask him, he'll explain to you how he's going to do it and how he's going to explain to the Republicans that it's to their benefit also. He's a man, you know, and how he's going to fund the Oregon Health Plan. And he's an old-style Democrat, you know, like from the Roosevelt kind of day.
You mean like straight talking?
Yeah, he's...
Is that what you mean?
He's straight
what's
talking.
What's old start?
And he actually has a viable alternative. And he's been working the state. He's been going around the state for over a year now. He's building a grassroots campaign. He's not kowtowing to the big money interests. He's not selling out his soul to whatever corporate interest. But he's, you know, it's at www.PeteSorensen.com. And also people can go to Vote for Lucinda.
Okay. And the other candidates in the Lucinda race are?
Is Amanda Fritz and that whatchamacallit terrible guy from rich guy that's already sitting on the city council. We don't need to repeat his
name. Yeah, in fairness, we do. What are we talking about?
Well, see, but I'm not the host, Joe. You're the host. I don't
who's
have to
the
be
incumbent?
Fair. I mean,
you can say the name.
He's
who's
got
the incumbent?
His money. He's got his big bucks, and he votes against police accountability every time he gets a chance. And for that, he doesn't get a free ride in my book.
So the incumbent is Saltzman.
Yeah, that's
okay,
true.
I just wanted to get that out there. And then you said there's some Republican candidate, but you can't remember his name, and I don't know his name either.
Yeah, well.
All right, but you know, city council's nonpartisan, ha, ha, ha.
So people can do something. Right. And Eric Stan put this voter election idea out there, and, you know, people can support people. They can go, and they can actually get involved and take back their democracy, or they can sit on the sidelines and wring their hands and waiting for Jane to do it.
Okay, who's Jane? All right.
You don't remember before Paul, Roe versus Wade?
Paul, we'll see you later.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
Right if you get work, man. 231-8187. That slowed us down a bit.
I don't know. It's good, though.
It's good. Real Paul, grounded. Yeah. Grounded in the
local
real political
politics.
Thing. Paul is very grounded in real politics.
Yes, he is.
And I'm glad
very
he talked to us.
He puts a lot of energy
he
in
really
it.
Does.
Making the city a better place.
And he knows these candidates, which I have to admit, I just say we all should know them, but I don't. All right.
231.
I know a few of them.
8187 is the number to call. I want to get back to the hearings, but let's take Kyle's call first.
Okay.
All right.
Kyle, you're on the air.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
I have something that I won't commentate mostly on it that I would like to share with our listeners, and you may have heard of it before. It's called 14 Defining Characteristics of Fascism. It's written by Dr. Lawrence Britt.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've heard that?
Yeah.
I haven't heard it read on the air, and I put it out on the tables where I work because there's constantly stuff pro and con on the tables around where I work, and it stays out there.
See? Water cooler talk, Joe.
Yeah, water cooler stuff. When I put this out on the table, it was gone the very next day.
Okay. Does that mean they threw it away or somebody picked it up?
Somebody got it out. I put two copies of it out there.
Someone took it home to study.
I hope so. I really do, but I'm going to put some more out. But
anyway, do you want to read the 14 real quick?
I'd like to read them real quick.
Go for it.
Do it to it.
Dr. Lawrence Britt has examined the fascist regimes of Hitler, Germany, Mussolini, Italy, Franco in Spain, Suharto, Indonesia, and several Latin American regimes. Britt found 14 defining characteristics common to each. One, powerful and continuing nationalism. Fascist regimes tend to make constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, symbols, songs, and other paraphernalia. Flags are seen everywhere, as are flag symbols on clothing and in public displays. Two, disdain for the recognition of human rights because of fear of enemies and the need for security, the people in fascist regimes are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need. The people tend to look the other way or even approve of torture, summary executions, assassinations, long incarcerations of prisoners, etc. Three, identification of enemies, scapegoats, as a unifying cause. The people are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate a perceived common threat or foe, racial, ethnic, or religious minorities, liberals, communists, socialists, terrorists, etc., and the list goes on. Five, rampant sexism. The government of fascist nations tend to be almost exclusively male-dominated. Under fascist regimes, traditional gender roles are made more rigid. Divorce, abortion, and homosexuality are suppressed, and the state is represented as the ultimate guardian of the family institution. Six, controlled mass media. Sometimes the media is directly controlled by the government, but in other cases, the media is indirectly controlled by the government regulation or sympathetic media spokespeople and executives. Censorship, especially in wartime, is very common. Seven, obsession with national security. Fear is used as a motivational tool by the government over the masses. Eight, religion and government are intertwined. Governments in fascist nations tend to use the most common religion in the nation as a tool to manipulate public opinion. Religious rhetoric and terminology is common from government leaders, even when the major tenets of the religion are diametrically opposed to the government's policies or actions. Nine, corporate power is protected. The industrial and business aristocracy of a fascist nation often are the ones who put the government leaders into power, creating a mutually beneficial business/government relationship and power elite. Ten, labor power is suppressed. Because the organizing power of labor is the only real threat to a fascist government, labor unions are either eliminated entirely or are severely suppressed. 11. Disdain for intellectuals and the arts. Fascist nations tend to promote and tolerate open hostility to higher education and academia. It is not uncommon for professors and other academics to be censored or even arrested. Free expression in the arts and letters is openly attacked. 12. Obsession with crime and punishment. Under fascist regimes, the police are given almost limitless power to enforce laws. The people are often willing to overlook police abuses and even forego civil liberties in the name of patriotism. There is often a national police force with virtually unlimited power in fascist nations. 13. Rampant cronyism and corruption. Fascist regimes almost always are governed by groups of friends and associates who appoint each other to government positions and use governmental power and authority to protect their friends from accountability. It is not uncommon in fascist regimes for national resources and even treasures to be appropriated or even outright stolen by government leaders. And lastly, 14, fraudulent elections. Sometimes elections in fascist nations are a complete sham.
Sometimes.
Other times, elections are manipulated by smear campaigns against or even assassination of opposition candidates. Use of legislation to control voting numbers or political district boundaries and manipulation of the media. Fascist nations also typically use their judiciaries to manipulate or control elections.
You mean like the 2000 election or like the gerrymandering of Texas?
No, he's not drawing any parallels here, Joe.
Just reading that as I was trying to read it, I mean, so many things are popping in my mind as I go through.
It's been really hard not to interrupt you, actually. Go ahead.
So many things came to mind, you know, I almost couldn't read it all, you know, but, I had to get it out over the air because...
Yeah.
People need to think about this, and you can see it. You can get this at www.rense. I don't know how to pronounce.
Wait, go through it again.
rense.com. Rense or Rance? I don't know how that would.
Rense.
S is in Sam. E.
Oh, S is in Sam. Rense.
Yeah. So, and the guy's name is Dr. Lawrence Britt, B-R-I-T-T. But, you know, we recall the, you know, the attack upon the college professor who has written radical books for his thoughts on the Twin Towers. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, yeah, in Colorado.
Yeah, in Colorado. His name escapes me right off the bat. Anyway, you know, there's that case, and there's others where people have been attacked for their opinions and views if they're too inflammatory.
Well, in fact, the right-wingers are paying $100 bounties for students to spy on professors at the University of Southern California, UCLA.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah. I forget which one of those two.
And if they're not doing it,
I think
the NSA,
it's UCLA.
And if they're not doing it, the NSA is.
Oh, man, you've made my day. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome.
I know, I appreciate that.
You have a good day.
All right, 231-8187. That's a good 14 characteristics. That's good. Every one of them, I was checking them off. And, dude.
Yeah.
I was checking
every one of them off.
Oh, my. I don't know, though. Is rendition where to countries where they boil your arm off, is that kind of like, you know, that...
Oppressive police powers?
Yeah, oppressive police powers.
I'd say that qualifies.
Maybe. Yeah. All right, 231-8187. You wanted to talk about something.
The hearings.
The hearings!
I'm just reeling under that fascist barrage there.
No, that was good. I'm glad he did that. I'm glad we let him do that.
And one other thing that I think we can observe from looking at historical fascist regimes is they seem to only be sustainable by conquest and plunder.
Well, that's
either from
that's
other countries
actually,
or from their own citizens.
Yeah, I would add the 15th, which is always a kind of nationalist territorial expansion.
Yeah, and it has to be keep going to sustain itself.
Yeah, well, because it's fundamentally always going to outspend what it actually has.
Right.
You
right.
see, to wage its wars, but the wars are off the books; they're not on the budget.
Right.
So
you can't outspend somebody.
Do not worry about that.
Not on the budget.
No, not on the budget. All right.
Do you want to read that stuff real quick?
I'm going to read this stuff. Right. I got to tell people, first of all, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. That's Abe Proctor. We do this every Tuesday, but there's excellent and similar sorts of programs, 7:30 to 9, Mondays through Fridays. And coming up at 9 today on Between the Covers, Ed Goldberg, whose voice is suspiciously similar to mine, interviews mystery writer Libby Fisher-Hellman, author of A Shot to Die For. At 9:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Dr. Manning Marable, author of the new book, Living Black History. At 10, we'll speak with Barbara Rossing, author of The Rapture Exposed, The Message of Hope in the Book of Revelation, which debunks the right wing's interpretation of the last book of the Bible. I think the last book of the Bible was done on smack. Anyway, at 10:30 on stage and studio, topics include The Monkey King by Tears of Joy and Print and Paint Make Maxers. I'm sorry. And Paint Mixers by Damale E. I.O. And at 11 on Democracy Now! I love Democracy Now! Topics include the Bush administration's a right to spy on American citizens without a court order. No, it's not a right. The administration's insisting that it has the right to spy on Americans without a court order. See, this is important. I want to stop for a minute. It isn't that they don't have legislation, the FISA legislation already in place. They want to essentially gather power into the executive branch beyond what the law already allows for the principle of that is the idea of that.
Yeah.
And I assume their spying would not be justified because it goes way beyond what they're admitting to if they actually had to go to those FISA courts. Okay, spying on American citizens without a court order and debate on the global Muslim protests over the publication of cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad.
And we didn't even touch on that.
We didn't even touch on that. Yeah. Now, that's an interesting issue. Maybe we'll touch on that sometime, because it is really worth talking about.
You mentioned Damale Io. She's a very, very cool lady.
Yeah,
Damale Io. She came up with something called rentanegro.com.
Oh, yes, that's that woman. I wanted to have her on our show.
Yeah, we should have her on our
show. We have a show. She's funny.
She's brilliant.
Yeah, she is, really. And I would like to rent a Negro, actually. Of my own, sort of.
All right, we're going to stop talking about that.
No, we're not going to get into that. That'll piss off a bunch of people. But I think people don't get the idea. Never mind. You want to hear her, because she's really smart. Anyway, I think, tokenism strikes again. I think that that we really need to get back to this war power stuff. We need to over and over again insist on the motives of this administration with its spying and so on. And I wish the Congress of the United States had some courage. You know, I really do. But the fact of the matter is they should not have allowed the Attorney General to talk to them without taking an oath.
No, it's absurd. It's patently absurd. On its face.
They should have walked out. Democrats should have walked out.
They should have walked out. You're absolutely correct.
Cowards.
They should have walked out.
Cowards.
Yeah. They should have walked out. They should have unanimously voted against Alito. They should have filibustered until the cows came home. They should have done any number of things since September 11, 2001 that they haven't done.
But they're stuck on the horns of their own... They're stuck on the horns of their own petard.
Want to mix any more metaphors before we go on?
Then there's Lieberman.
Yeah, there's
the best friend the Republican fascists ever had.
Let's pronounce it Lieberman.
Some people say you always get the government you deserve, which I don't believe. But the fact of the matter is, again, most Americans are view politics in the same way that they view the games before the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? So you watch it kind of as a sort of an entertainment.
Yep.
And they assume the politicians are lying. I mean, they assume that the politicians are filth, and therefore they are totally cynical and not disposed to take it at all seriously. And that's part of the system, too.
Yep.
When you have an electorate that essentially expects so little out of its politicians, they can get away with the kind of literally murder they get away with.
And then we get the government that other people pay for.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And I think that that's why people have to bite the existential bullet and come out with serious, constant effort to make people aware and to change the system in nonviolent ways. I think this is very, very important.
So, Senator Kennedy.
Senator Kennedy.
Senator Kennedy came out yesterday and asked Attorney General Gonzalez point blank if any innocent Americans were being spied upon.
And what did Gonzalez say?
Gonzalez says, I just don't know. I don't think that I can guarantee to you beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Well, really?
That's not happening.
Even without oath, he said that?
He said that without oath, yeah. As if to say, well, you know, our intentions are good, but once in a while, we're probably going to spy on somebody who doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, and occasionally people get the death penalty and get fried
and
aren't really guilty.
So this, my jaw dropped open, and I said to myself, if the Attorney General of the United States, the nation's top law enforcement official, can't tell you whether or not ordinary Americans who have nothing to do with terrorism are being spied upon by this program,
mm-hmm.
then who the hell can? Why isn't this guy under oath, and why is he being allowed to give such an obviously fudgy answer like that? I would wager, unless this thing is totally off the hook and widespread and flagrant and happening all the time, I bet he knows exactly who's been wiretapped, who's been spied.
You know, and then there's another aspect to this. This kind of program serves the interest of repressing all of us because, and I remember this from the anti-war movement in the 1960s and from the civil rights movement also, the assumption that the system is spying on you, listening to your phone calls, possibly even with new technologies today, actually listening to your conversations at home, listening in your bedroom. I mean, all this is now, you know, technologically feasible from satellites yet. So the knowledge that that is possible, that is that Big Brother is omnipotent in its ability mm-hmm. to observe you, is itself a device that oppresses you
yes.
and makes you afraid to take action. So even if you're not doing anything, you become aware that you have no real privacy. And that is psychologically debilitating.
A chilling effect.
Exactly. And that is the intent of it. You know, they give the impression, and you don't know whether it's true or not, that they know what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that whether you've been good or bad, like Santa Claus, you know.
And,
I mean?
And they say, trust us, we're only spying on the bad guys.
Right. Ha ha, wink, wink. But occasionally we might spy on you.
Right. So that exchange between Kennedy and Gonzalez prompted me to think about Gonzalez a little bit. What do we know about Gonzalez?
Well, Gonzalez, he's a Hispanic American.
He's a Hispanic American.
He's male.
He's male. And he also drafted a memo.
Yes.
Telling the president that he could torture his enemies.
Yes.
He called the Geneva Conventions quaint.
Yes.
And he provided the president with the legal rationale to torture detainees and to hold American citizens without a warrant.
Yes.
And he's the Attorney General of the United States. He sits on the National Security Council.
Yes.
And he was allowed to sit before a committee of Congress and tell Senator Kennedy that he didn't know if anybody was being accidentally spied upon and couldn't tell you who they might be.
And he didn't have to take an oath.
And he didn't have to take
an oath. Didn't even have to swear on the Bible. Not that that would stop someone from lying, but, you know.
That is a travesty of all that we're supposed to hold dear.
It's pretty shocking. 231-8187. Who do we got?
Probably
Richard.
Probably me.
Hi, hey, Richard. How are you?
Well, one of the most cogent things that was said was that we don't get much out of our elected officials because we don't know what to expect from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes along with the fellow that enlightened us about the 14 essential elements of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I'm focusing on is the suppression of, well, literacy. You take college professors out and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the ruling elite rules by keeping the rest of us illiterate in many
yes.
cases. And I want to share this little quote that maybe you'll bring a little literacy to all of us this week. See if you can recognize the source, boys. We declare that all men, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness. And they have at all times a right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they may think proper.
It's either Madison or Jefferson.
Madison.
That's the Oregon Constitution.
The first sentence
of the Oregon Constitution. Well, don't feel bad. I ran that by Dave Mazza and Joanne Bowman the other day, and even though Joanne Bowman was a representative and swore to support that, she had no clue.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
so don't feel bad.
I don't feel bad.
Okay.
But it's a good point.
Well, if we can, that's kind of an uplifting thing, you know,
yeah.
but it does run counter to your expressed sentiment a while ago about how we should go about things. We should keep our options open because the folks that set this thing up said we get to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they or we may think proper. That means anything goes. It's all legal as long as we think it is.
Well, wait. It's not all legal as we think it is.
If we think it is. If we, the people, think it's legal.
It is legal?
That's right. If we think it's proper, it's legal.
I don't think
all right.
that.
I'll let you go. It's almost done.
All right. Thanks a lot, man, for the call. Let's take one more call, shall we?
Yes. Who do we have?
Yes. My name's Jay.
Hey, Jay. What's up?
Good morning. One thing, Gonzalez, just a note, Gonzalez's history in Texas when he ingratiated himself with Bush is really worth study as far as his unscrupulousness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the impact of the budget cuts on homeless folks, near homeless folks, working poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about how to organize that growing number of people to really bring pressure in their own behalf, which is a real question.
Well, nationally it's difficult, but you know, the bonus marchers of the 1930s, the various movements where people came from all over the United States by actually walking or driving or riding the rails or whatever and gathering in D.C. in all of their poverty. Even the poverty campaign that was launched after Martin Luther King's death, those events had some effect. And I think those are things that are sorely needed right now. I'm not saying they're going to solve the problem, but that should be happening constantly. In other words, every legitimate means should be used. And Coxey's Army, that was the other one I was trying to think of.
Right.
Those are all very, very important. And at the local level, similar events, campaigns with campouts at Salem and campouts in Portland and so on, are also very important.
How do you think something like Portland Homeless Connect could be used to do that?
Oh, you know, I'm sorry. I'm saved by the bell here.
Right.
But it's a good question, and I think it should be raised a lot. And I do urge people who feel like they're dispossessed and have evidence of it to use the political system and go beyond the political system to organize and to present themselves, demonstrate, and demand their rights. And I think it's very, very important. In fact, I want to urge all of you out there, one day a week, spend some time, at least one day a week, struggling for the good, the true, and the beautiful.
You can write one email in 5 minutes and send it to 24 newspapers.
It's true.
It's just that easy.
It's true. And thank you very much for the call, and we've run out of time.
I'm Abe.
I'm Joe.
We'll see you next week.
All right. Keep on keeping on. KBO 90.7 on your FM dial. Who that's gonna
Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, and it's time for the Tuesday Radio Zine. First on Between the Covers, Ed Goldberg interviews mystery writer Libby Fisher-Hellman, author of A Shot to Die For. At 9:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Dr. Manning Marable, author of the new book, Living Black History. At 10, Kathleen Stevenson speaks with Barbara Rossing, author of The Rapture Exposed, The Message of Hope in the Book of Revelation, which debunks the right wing's interpretation of the last book of the Bible. And at 10:30 on stage and studio, topics include The Monkey King by Tears of Joy Theater and Paint Mixers by Damali Io. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include the Bush administration's right to spy on American citizens without a court order, and a debate on the global Muslim protests over the publication of cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad.